1 p.m. You're in Belt's Room 105 of the Thomas Stewart Building here in the nation's most beautiful capital city of Juneau, Alaska. Today is Monday, April 15th, 2024. Members present are Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Dunbar, and myself, Senator Bjorkman. Senators Merrick and Bishop will be here soon. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off or silence your cell phones. I'd like to recognize and welcome our recording secretary, Lisa Denny, and our LAO moderator, Joseph Giesbrecht. We have two items on our agenda today. First up is Senate Bill 235, CNA Training, followed by Senate Bill 237, Tax Credit Child Care Utility House Food. First up is Senate Bill 235. With us today, we have bill sponsor, Senator Kathy Giesel, and her staff, Jane Conway. Thank you for joining us at the table. Please put yourself on the record. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Senator Kathy Giesel. I have the honor of serving the municipality of Anchorage in Senate District E, including Whittier as well. This bill, Senate Bill 235, is entitled Certified Nurse Aide Training, Dementia, Alzheimer's. So full disclosure, like many of you, I have a relative who has dementia. My mother lives at the Anchorage Pioneer Home. Our Pioneer Homes serve as a safety net for many Alaskans who suffer from dementia. In fact, the percentage of the population in our Pioneer Homes is growing exponentially with dementia and Alzheimer's patients. These are high-level care. And it's placing quite a demand on our Pioneer Homes, just as one example. There's also, of course, the home and community-based clinicians or service providers. They're going into homes, again, to serve people who have dementia or Alzheimer's. This would increase the training required in the Certified Nurse Aide Program. These are the frontline providers, hands-on people in the Alaska Pioneer Homes, as well as in home and community-based services. Alaska has the highest growing senior population of any state for the last 10 years in a row. 34% of our residential care facilities patients have at least some form of dementia, 49% of nursing home residents, and 36% of individuals using home health. So, why are we offering this bill? Because the federal government has increased the regulations for training for certified nurse aides related to dementia. And in your backup materials, you'll see a document entitled Adopted Federal Regulation Language. There are five items there for the care of cognitively impaired residents. So what we would like to do is make sure that those criteria end up in our CNA education program. So you might ask, well, that kind of sounds like regulation that a board of nursing should pass. They're the body that regulates CNAs. And that's true. I agree with you. Sadly, that isn't happening. And it is a critical need. It is, as I said, a growing population. So that is the driving force behind this bill, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. We need to have these educational components in the CNA programs, and so we will encourage it through a piece of legislation putting these criteria into statute. So with that, Mr. Chairman, of course, I do have my aide here who can go through a sectional with you, and of course, I'm open to questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Giesel. Are there any questions for the bill sponsor? Ms. Conway, could you please walk us through the sectional?
Good afternoon. This is Jane Conway, staff to Senator Kathy Giesel. A little bit of wires crossed. This is a one-section bill. We don't actually have a sectional. However, I would like to point out that the support of this bill in your packet, you were distributed some letters of support. Just wanted to point out the Alzheimer's Resources of Alaska, of course, Alzheimer's Association has supported this bill. The Aleutian Pribilof Islands, UAA National Resource Center for Alaska Native Elders, Alaska Commission on Aging, the State of Alaska Long-Term Ombudsman's Program just submitted a letter of support, the Alaska Pioneer Homes, Hope Community Resources, Fairbanks Resource Agency, Bigelow Community Consulting. So there's a number of agencies who've weighed in on this piece of legislation, and I just wanted to point those out for you today. And then we have just a few people in for invited testimony available today on either Teams or calling in Chair Bjorkman. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that very much. First up for invited testifiers, we have Maureen Townsend.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, perfect. Just wanted to verify. Hello, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Maureen Townsend, and I live in Kenai, Alaska. I care about the quality dementia training and person-centered care education for CNAs because of my personal experience during my CNA training and whilst performing my clinicals in the dementia wing. My clinicals followed my education at the college, and it was meant to serve as real-life training, but instead deterred me away from moving forward as a CNA. In my classes, we learned countless ways to position a person, how to dress them, feed them, care for them. But what we did not go over was basic knowledge of Alzheimer's disease, dementia-related behaviors, and activities of daily living. We spent 30 minutes plus discussing how to wash our hands, but did not discuss understanding dementia behavior, appropriate responses, and methods of reducing difficult behaviors. To be honest, if I had been asked at the time if I wanted to take an addition to my classes, I probably would have been hesitant. However, having been through it all and on the other side, I am strongly of the opinion that those extra classes would have made all the difference with me and with others. During my clinicals, I felt poorly equipped to deal with the scope of what I witnessed while working with the dementia patients, and this includes often violent, erratic behaviors. I feel confident that had I had the comprehensive training in recognizing signs and symptoms, forming relationships, communication skills, and best practices, that my career would have taken a different direction. Instead of becoming a CNA, I changed my route and instead became a surgical assistant at a dermatology clinic, as to be assured that I would never be put in that position again. Our state is in need of CNAs, and I hate to think of a lack of training would and has kept someone from performing in this industry. I do not believe our local CNAs have been properly equipped to work alongside dementia patients, and denying them specialized training would be a disservice to both them and those they serve. Thank you for taking my testimony.
Thank you very much, Ms. Townsend. Are there any questions from committee members? Thank you, ma'am. Up next, we have Ms. Michelle Cassano. Ms. Cassano, please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Michelle Cassano, and I wish to thank the chair and the members of the committee for inviting me to testify. I currently live in Anchorage, but started my nursing career in Alaska in Nome. I'm a retired nurse now, and I support Senate Bill 235. I care deeply about the quality of dementia education and person-centered training for CNAs. My husband, Lawrence Williams, who was a veteran, deserved better care. He also deserved to be safe. And without this knowledge, there can be injury to the CNAs and to the patient. He has Alzheimer's, and our family made the difficult decision to place him in a facility. It was a respected facility and of a higher quality than some that are available in Alaska. Their staff were still very new and needed education about dementia and person-centered care. Subsequently, Larry was frequently and unnecessarily transported to emergency services, often late at night, which meant he was in the ER all day. And we averaged, I figured it out once, and it averaged to almost $14,000 a month in unnecessarily emergency room care. He did not need this. When he paced, he got tired and he laid down. They would find him snoozing against a wall and assumed that he had fallen down. If they had made him a cup of cocoa, and talked to him gently, he could have just been put back to bed. This lack of quality education for Alaska's CNAs is a burden to emergency rooms, a poor use of medical resources, and terribly upsetting to patients and families. And I'm not putting all the blame on CNAs, which is why I would like to see this education be mandatorily included. CNAs trained in dementia care effectively manage challenging behaviors and ensure the safety and security of our loved ones. The educational content outlined in Senate Bill 235 would give families peace of mind knowing that their family member is in capable hands, even in difficult situations. We subsequently had to transfer him to a smaller facility, and in the last 2 years of his life, he did not go to the emergency room once. CNAs need to be trained in dementia care and easily recognize symptoms of the cognitive decline. This enables timely interventions and support service, potentially showing the progression of dementia, which can go very slowly or move very quickly. I was later able to work with staff and offer them many of the resources that are available for this education. We want to avoid falls, keep them safe, and give him the personal care he needed. He spent 2 years at that new facility, and like I said before, he had not one hospital visit. CNAs are an important part of the healthcare team, and I value them very much, and all the Alaska CNA programs should cover person-centered care, signs and symptoms of dementia, and content on responding to these challenges, dementia-related behaviors. These behaviors can also be seen in patients and residents who don't have dementia but are just simply aging. I want to thank you for hearing my story, and for those of you who have family members living with dementia, my thoughts are with you.
Thank you very much. Are there questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you very much for testifying to Senate Labor and Commerce today. Up next is Ms. Laura McIntyre. Ms. McIntyre, please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Hello, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Laura McIntyre, and I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and I serve as the Senior Director of Health Systems for the Alzheimer's Association. In addition, it's helpful to know that I'm also caring for my father, who's in middle stage. So the stories that I've heard today are very personal to me. I can provide background on the importance of person-centered care for dementia patients and the need for CNAs to be trained in this type of care. Which outline recommendations for quality care practices based on comprehensive review of current evidence, best practices, and expert opinions. These recommendations offered a holistic approach to training and care to support persons at risk for the cognitive decline and support for persons living with dementia throughout the progression of the disease. Person-centered dementia care is a widely accepted as a value-based commitment to support people with dementia and is a guiding principle in care services. Person-centered care is a philosophy built around understanding the unique needs, values, and beliefs of individuals receiving care. This type of approach assists in creating a more interpersonal relationship between the person living with dementia and their professional care providers, such as CNAs. A person-centered approach enables care systems to emphasize a social model focused on relationships of care rather than a medical model, which tends to focus on processes, schedules, staffing, and organizational needs. Comprehensive training on this topic is necessary because the philosophy of person-centered care needs to be interwoven into all aspects of care. For example, if a CNA is offered training around effective communications or managing behaviors, you would want that CNA to really understand how knowing the specific preferences of that person would affect the type of communication you had. For example, if the person living with dementia was a veteran and would prefer to be called Colonel, that would be important to know to use the verbiage of Colonel rather than their first name. That might help with effective communication so that that person can receive and communicate well. Another example, oftentimes we will train CNAs on how to use different strategies to manage behaviors or what we call behavioral expressions. So understanding what was meaningful to that person and why they should know that, the types of questions they might ask. For example, my father, who is in middle stage dementia, formerly owned a lot of restaurants. So when I think about meaningful activities for him, I might cook alongside him or do something in that nature. Whereas my mother, for example, did not enjoy cooking. So she might not find that as a meaningful example of an activity that she might want to perform if she had dementia. So it's very important as the CNAs learn different techniques around dementia that they also understand how that person-centered approach should be taken. Training for this type of disease cannot be covered in a brief overview either. Dementia is a very complex and progressive disease that often goes through different phases. So again, understanding the person-centered approach, knowing where that person is in their disease, and knowing what was effective at one point might not be effective later on in the disease. So they have to go back, determine again what is important to that person, where are they in the disease, and who else can support that progression. Understanding all of this helps with the complexities in navigating this. Giving this type of comprehensive training would enable you all to recruit more effective CNAs, would keep folks like Ms. Townsend more likely to care for these various individuals in various care settings. It also helps with retention, and it helps to prevent surprises so they don't enter into this job, as Ms. Townsend shared earlier, that they're prepared and know that when they see certain behaviors, that may be very normal for them. And it is okay. It helps them to embrace that care, helps them to think outside of the box, and helps them to work in a team-based approach. Thank you for your time and your willingness to hear my testimony.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Ms. McIntyre? I'd like to recognize for the record that we were joined by Senator Merrick at 1:49 p.m. Up next, or I should say also, we have available for questions Elizabeth Bolig with the Alzheimer's of Alaska Association and Sylvan Robb, Division Director of the Corporation of Professional and Business Licensing. Are there any questions for Ms. Bolig, Ms. Robb, or the bill sponsor? Seeing none, we'll set this bill aside for further consideration at a future meeting. We'll take a brief at ease while we set up for the next bill. back on the record, 152. Up next, we will take up Senate Bill 237, Tax Credit, Child Care, Utility House Food. Our first hearing on this bill was March 15th, when we heard a presentation of the bill and a PowerPoint from the Tax Division. With us today is Mike Williams, Acting Deputy Director from the Tax Division, for questions online. Also, we have available the legislative liaison for the department, if she would like to join us. She's saying no. Ms. Bushnell would not like to join us. Well, with Mr. Williams online for questions, do any members of the committee have questions for Acting Deputy Director from the Tax Division? Seeing and hearing none, at this time I'll reopen public testimony on Senate Bill 237. Is there anyone in the room who would wish to testify to Senate Bill 237? There's no one online. At this time, I will close public testimony. No questions? Mr. Williams, can you hear us?
Yes, Senator Bjorkman, and to the members of the committee, this is Michael Williams, Acting Deputy Tax Director. Happy to be here and answer any questions you have.
Very good. Senator Dunbar has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there's another bill that we're considering in another committee having to do with a tax credit. And the question has come up, and we've been discussing how many actual sort of tax-paying entities it would apply to. And it's much smaller than you'd think, because there are relatively few entities that pay the type of taxes that are at issue in that. We're a state that doesn't have personal income taxes, doesn't have sales taxes. So there's relatively few things you can actually credit a tax credit against. And so I guess my question, I know we spoke last time about the indefinite nature. I mean, this has got a very speculative, I guess would be the term, fiscal note. That is, there's a wide range of possible outcomes. But could you describe, Mr. Williams, how many entities and what percentage of entities in Alaska you think would be able to take advantage of this tax credit? And how many individuals, I guess I'm curious too, would any individuals be able to take advantage of this tax credit?
Thank you. Through the chair to Senator Dunbar, Alaska's corporate income tax, there's roughly 18,000 entities that actually file a tax return, but of those, roughly 11,000 are pass-through entities, what otherwise are known as S corporations, and they typically do not pay tax because of the pass-through nature and Alaska not having a personal income tax. So that leaves roughly 7,000 C corporations that file a return, and of that number, it varies year to year just due to the cyclical nature of business cycles and what industry they might be in. But roughly 1,000 corporations actually pay tax, but when you talk about anybody with what you might consider significant taxable income or tax liability to the state, then you're only talking maybe a couple of hundred entities at most that have meaningful tax liability to the state. And typically the individuals do not have any liability to the state unless they happen to be the sole shareholder of a corporation that owes tax, but even then they're not directly paying it. It's their business entity that's paying tax, but individuals don't pay tax income tax to the state of Alaska because there is no personal income tax.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
So, I mean, this gets to the same concern with the other bill, and we're not discussing that bill, but as you just described, 18,000 entities, but when you really drill down, it's only a few hundred. And so when you have a bill like this, you're concentrating it amongst a relatively few number of comparatively very large corporations that were getting this benefit. So another approach would be, you know, if this cost is going to cost us $200 million, instead of foregoing that revenue from very small from very large corporations, you could take $200 million and distribute it to individuals and to smaller corporations, you know, small businesses, and get the same affordability, but you'd get it to a wider variety of Alaskans and not only the very largest corporations. But my, my question for you, Mr. Williams, is, again, thank you for that description of, you know, S-corps, LLCs, C-corps, you know, a variety of different entities. I'm thinking about some of the largest employers in Alaska and whether or not they would be impacted by this. Let's take the fishing industry, for example, employs a lot of people in Alaska, particularly where I'm from. Would the average sort of fishing boat or fishing family be able to take advantage of this tax court, this tax break?
Through the chair to Senator Dunbar, it would certainly depend on how that commercial enterprise is organized. Again, the income tax only falls on entities organized or being treated under federal tax purposes as a C corporation. So if that commercial fishing enterprise certainly is organized as a C corporation, it could have a tax liability. But in my experience, more likely than not, they are not organized as such. Most family-owned businesses in Alaska are organized as some type of pass-through entity.
Like an LLC?
An LLC, a partnership, an S-corp.
Okay, that's enough for now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there any other questions for Mr. Williams? Senator Dunbar.
Sorry, I just had one, another one. Excuse me. What about village corporations and those kind of ANCSA-created corporations?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, certainly both ANCSA and village corporations file federal tax returns, which in turn requires them to file a state corporate tax return. Again, liabilities will vary from entity to entity, so they potentially could take advantage of this credit to the extent they have a tax liability.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Is there any committee discussion? Seeing and hearing none, what are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move to report Senate Bill 237, version 33-G, sugar 2419 /apple from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, Senate Bill 237, version /A, is reported from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Just stay around so we can sign the paperwork right after we're done. The Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will meet again on Wednesday, April 17th, when we will hear from the Commissioner Designee for the Department of Labor, Kathy Munoz, and also we will hear other appointments to various boards and commissions that have been referred to the Labor and Commerce Committee. After that, we will take up Senate Bill 152, Community Energy Facilities Net Metering. There are three appointees which will not be taken up at Wednesday's meeting, but will be taken up at a later meeting. As there is no further business to come before the committee, this meeting is adjourned at 2:01 p.m.